Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Tanya. How are you?
My cold open thoughts for today? No, that's not how we do cold open.
Yeah, you planned the cold. That's not cold then. That's planned open. Yeah, what are your thoughts?
I was just going to surprise you.
Yeah?
Tell you that I hate being back to work.
That's right.
I hate it. I don't want to work.
No, you had a time off from your day job, maternity leave, paternal leave.
Parental,
thank you. It's not maternal nor paternal. It's parental. It's gender-free leave, which is nice.
Yeah.
And now you're back to work and you're hating it.
What if my boss hears this podcast?
Well, this is the least of your problems then. There's the other issues from this podcast. We've talked about all sorts of randy, racy stuff on this podcast.
I guess so. You know, it's, let me put it this way. I like aspects of my job.
Mm-hmm.
I do not want to work.
What's your dream job, Tanya? Is it to be the new Blippi or the new Ms. Rachel? Would you like to be a Miss Rachel?
No, I don't.
She's a children's entertainer.
No, I don't want to be a children's entertainer.
No?
No, I want to do research and find problems.
What?
Yeah.
There's plenty. We've got a surplus of problems.
Yeah, I want to be world. Like, look at this problem.
A new problem you
want
to
I want to find the problems, but I don't want to solve them.
You're like the opposite of Vanilla Ice in that way. He once sang, if there was a problem, yo, I'd solve it. Check out the hook while the DJ revolves it.
I want to be like, if there's a problem, yo, I'll find it.
Check out the hook while the DJ rewinds it?
Yes,
that's
me. Because
instead of going forward.
You don't need to explain.
Going backwards.
I can't help it.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Talking to Women About Video Games. I'm Jonathan, and I'm joined by Tanya.
I am here. I'm like, oh, present.
We are at Tanya's work desk. We're surrounded by work monitors and stats and figures. We're in like
triangles and acronyms.
Yeah, it's like CTU. From the television show 24, which some folks may remember, Kiefer Sutherland starred in it. But every once in a while, he'd go to like the underground intelligence base that was like a dungeon filled with computers, basically, and the smartest people in the world. And that's you, Tanya. You're in your dungeon where amongst your computers, you're one of the smartest.
Finding those problems. Gonna pass them along to the next person.
That's your hope. And it comes to mind that this is the same kind of setup that people imagine the finest of AAA video games are made with all these computer monitors and programs running. And recently, a video game, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, the sequel to Final Fantasy VII Remake, very confusing, had a demo release, and boy, the world went wild. It ended up with the most important kind of outcome, which is my most popular tweet. Of all time came.
Of all this. Kinds.
All kind of tweets, yes. You've done all kinds. I don't do the shirtless selfie tweets anymore.
Why is that, Jonathan?
Too soft in the middle now, as Paul Simon once sang. But I'll get back on track as soon as life gets normal again. But this Final Fantasy VII Rebirth caused a massive controversy with anger and hate, and my tweet about it somehow ended up just striking the right chord and just filled the world with love and joy. Isn't that surprising? The topic is yellow paint.
Jonathan loves it when his tweets go viral.
You're still talking about the tweet and making fun of me. Yellow paint, Tanya.
Yeah.
I'm looking at, you've got yellow all around you.
Like Microsoft paint?
No, not like. So, AAA video games, super realistic graphics. And this was an issue in Resident Evil 4 Remake. It was something that happened in the first God of War reboot, if I remember correctly. And it's now in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I think it was also in Alan Wake, the original one. Because the backgrounds are so realistic, they have to show you, the player, what objects are interactable, what objects you can interact with by just spray painting them yellow. And in some games, like the God of War reboot, at the very end, they explain somebody painted that stuff for you in order to help you with your journey.
Find your way.
That's right. But in other games, like this Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, it's just yellow paint. And people are like, this is ridiculous. Why? They couldn't think of a better in-game way to show you what objects are interactable. It's like the video game developers themselves painted it yellow, and in doing so are telling you, the player, the whole time you're playing it, hey, this is a video game. Video game designers painted this stuff yellow because they didn't think you would be able to figure out what to interact with on your own, so it breaks the immersion, which is the irony, because realistic graphics are supposed to create immersion, but by painting stuff yellow, the game is yelling, this is a video game and we made this so you can interact with these objects. Touch the yellow!
I'll do it.
You'll touch the yellow. Do you have any strong feelings about this, Tani? The fact that it's not explained in the story why this stuff is yellow speaks to a lack of prioritization of immersive storytelling. Any thoughts, feelings, any issues with this at all, Tani?
No. If it makes it feel right while you're playing, having fun, good times, comfort.
You want the comforts.
Comfortable experience.
Yeah, you do. So you wouldn't be uncomfortable if, let's say, and I hate to always draw upon the Katamari series, but it's the one series I know truly immerses you. Seeing you play the Katamari games, you get totally sucked in.
Yeah,
you start going, no, or yes, yes. Like you make noises. When that Katamari suddenly grows and the camera pans out and the music goes, you go, oh yeah.
I do?
Yeah. Like you feel it. You feel the size.
I like it when the people are screaming in pain.
You also love that. You love it.
Like suck them up.
That's how you are.
Like the little children are like.
So you wouldn't be bothered if in the Katamari games there were suddenly just like a photorealistic picture of Ronald Reagan, or like, you know, Matthew McConaughey was suddenly just in it as
him. That would
be
hilarious.
Just being, hey, Matthew McConaughey here. You would be fine with that.
Be like, check out my Lincoln.
It wouldn't break the storytelling immersion. It wouldn't break the world immersion for you to have a sudden, obvious change in visual style yelling at you, this is all fake. That wouldn't bother you.
Not typically.
Not typically.
Not so much.
Is there any instance in which it would bother you?
If it was like I was in an immersive experience and then something came out of left field like Uncanny Valley.
Oh.
Something really weird and unsettling looking, then yeah.
Interesting.
But if it's fun and cute and doesn't hinder my ability to keep playing, sure.
Sure.
Stupid.
Fun, cute, weird, fine with you. Uncanny Valley. So just trying to be realistic, but missing the mark in a way that's unsettling, not right. The yellow paint, I think, sits somewhere in between the two, which is probably why it's been such a strong argument between people. Some people saying, hey, it's video game design. It's not supposed to be real. It's okay. Why don't they set up arrows pointing, go this way, and have like a voiceover actually yell, climb, climb. Like some people are taking that stance. Just keep it fun and silly. Other people are saying it is Uncanny Valley style because this is real but not real at the same time for that yellow paint to be there.
Like choose one path.
Right. Choose one path.
You can't be two games at once.
You can't be trying to say this is serious business, realistic world, while also doing video game design stuff blatantly right in your face, yelling this is a video game. You got to go down either path. Or
and others are saying, why can't you? They just did.
So many people are saying so many things. And I agree with you on that. All the games that do the yellow paint thing, except Alan Wake, actually, surprisingly enough, even though that's the one that I think got the least flack for it. God of War, Resident Evil Remake, and now Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, they're doing great. So you can do the yellow paint. And sure, people who are bored online, because there's not that much going on with video games right now, will complain or defend it passionately. But in the end, the games tend to do well with that design choice, which is why they keep doing it. We got a new guest who's going to talk about their thoughts on narrative design choices, like the yellow paint situation and much more. Her name's Coco, and I'm excited to have her on the show.
Me too. Hi, Coco.
Hey folks, Daniel here. So if you remember from last episode when Jonathan talked to Cade, his microphone on this chat with Coco is similarly messed up. It just sounds like pure garbage. So rather than subject you to too much of that, he's asked me to sub in some of his responses. I'll leave in a few of the Jonathanisms, but get ready to hear me jumping in to be Jonathan for a few of these. So, Coco, I was lying in bed and thought, gotta record with Coco. So I sent you an offhand DM and you responded within seconds. And so we're just jumping in. I'm so appreciative that you're willing to be on the show.
Yeah, well, you know, thank you for enabling me to strong arm my way onto this show. And now that I'm here, I only have two questions. I know usually have one question, but my first one is, Jonathan, why aren't you famous rapper Freddie Gibbs?
Because I'm not named Freddie Gibbs. I don't know who Freddie Gibbs is. Is he related to the Gibb brothers from the Bee Gees?
Yeah, probably. But, you know, he's from Gary, Indiana. Which is not far from my hometown, which is a very, very small hometown. I don't really care. Like, come find St. Pierre, Indiana, if you have nothing better to do. I don't live there anymore, so whatever. But yeah, that's where I'm from. It's in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by mint fields. They export mint all over the world. But anyway,
you're from the mint
Gibbs.
Capital of Indiana?
I'm from the mint capital of the world, baby. So North Judson is the town. They have an annual mint festival on Father's Day weekend. And yeah, they seriously do export mint all over the world. And so if you've ever had anything with mint in it, there's a decent chance it came from where I live for the better part of like 30 years. So
you're a part of Big Mint.
Oh no, I don't want to be a part of big anything except maybe big trans, but you know.
You're a part of Big Trans. I was clicking on your Twitter feed just to make sure you weren't a Nazi or something, because you never know.
No Nazi stuff, which was great. But then I clicked on your partner's Twitter feed. Huge penises. You love them. And
I'm all for it. Don't get me wrong. No judgments towards those penises. Just, wow.
Yeah, well, you know, my boyfriend loves big penises, and I'm glad you don't have anything against that.
Oh, no, of course
and,
not.
Well, good.
Like it should be some sort of rap song. I don't know if that's been broached, but we're going to broach
big
it.
Big penises,
time.
The rap song?
Yeah, just big penises.
Have you ever listened to rap, Jonathan?
I have.
Almost all of them are about like big penises and people doing things with the rapper's big penises and
really?
Rappers doing things with their own big penises. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness. I am out of touch as usual. And you are probably young enough to be my child. I'm guessing, Coco.
What?
Yeah, I'm old. I'm almost 50. I'm old enough to be some people's grandfathers.
This
yeah, you would have been a young father, but yeah, you could definitely be my dad.
I could have.
You want to be
dad.
My dad, Jonathan? I don't have one anymore. Do you want to be my dad?
I feel fatherly towards you, and this is
sweet.
How I would talk about your penis feed or your feed. That would be as your dad be like, wow, those are some big penises.
I can't wait.
Past the
Jonathan, I can't wait to hear the song Daniel makes out of you saying this is how I would talk about your penis.
Not like, your penis specifically, but
no,
penises
I know,
in general. Like, on the
no, that's the thing though. Like he's gonna cut it off right there, and it's gonna be like a chorus or you know a loop or something of you just going, "This is how I would talk about your penis," and then it's gonna like there's gonna be a beat. It's gonna be like a techno beat and. Yeah, it's
you're
gonna be
a club fan
banger.
Of the show. You know the person,
yes.
Which is
I was offended actually, Jonathan, when you explained to me that guest interviews are 20 to 30 minutes long, as if I haven't listened to every single episode except for maybe the last two because my life is going to shit right now. But
yeah, I'm sorry to offend you, and thank you for listening. I never expect anyone to actually
have listened to the show. We wouldn't have as many products we get sent for review if people actually heard how much this show is not a show that's going to be a mainstream hit.
But enough about that. You know the show, you know what we're going to do, I think, and I have no idea what you're going to do. What do you want to talk about related to video games or otherwise?
So, Jonathan...
Yes.
This is what popped into my mind. So this is what we're going to roll with and see where it goes from here. So Palworld just came out, right?
Oh, yeah, it did.
Palworld just came out. I haven't played it. I'm only mildly interested in it, but I'm mostly interested because of the what I would call false controversy over its supposed stealing from, you know, Nintendo's and Pokemon's IP. What are your thoughts on people, on the outrage about, you know, the similarities between the designs and stuff?
Well, I don't want to make you self-conscious, and you are a fan of the show.
That's the last thing we talked about on the other episode of this show.
So the gnomes
are
gnomes.
Oh, no!
I don't feel so conscious about it.
No!
And people are still talking about Pal World till this day, so it's never bad to bring up Pal World, but I'll summarize briefly, and then you'll hear a little more about it. I didn't talk about it too long. I think Pal World is completely unremarkable, and people are pretty bored right now, and they want to take sides in a fight, either pro-Pokemon or against Pokemon.
I think the Pokemon Company are really mean business people, so I'm no fan of them as business folks. I think the creatives of those games are really great people. I've talked to James Turner, one of the designers, on Twitter. Very pleasant person working on a new game called The Plucky Squire.
Likewise, the Pal World people don't seem like they're super into creativity or arts. They're all just business folks fighting about business. And I don't have a horse in that race. I think people that are just focused on making a lot of money are not people I relate with or want to really engage with in terms of picking a side. So yeah, I'm out. I'm out of the whole Pal World talk. But I was fascinated, as you were, it sounds like, with how much people couldn't stop talking about it and getting really mean to each other on either side of the argument. It was really, really fascinating.
And Pal World, from what I've gathered, doesn't have much story. My understanding is you are someone who has studied literature, loves storytelling, loves the craft of explaining a story and whisking people away with a narrative.
And there's not much of that in there. It's just the Pokemon got guns now. Now we got to make them kill. And that's not super creative. It's just edgelord stuff from what I can tell. But your thoughts. Yeah, I want to hear if you want to talk about Pal World. We want to talk about The Last of Us, you mentioned that's not too good. Any sort of topic in there about the writing of games? I'd love to get your expert opinion.
Oh, geez. I wish I could have prepared something, Jonathan. Oh, my God. Well, so quickly on Pal World, I will say I think it's interesting that you said you were fascinated by it. I don't know if, like, maybe that's just the word that popped up, but maybe you meant something else. Because to me, I thought it was amusing. Because, you know, it's really just an extension or, like, a subgenre of, you know, the console wars, you know, the fanboy mentality and all that. And it's just, you know, it's all bullshit, all nothing burger, all that nonsense that people say online.
Yeah, yeah. I hadn't thought about the fact that Pal World is not on Nintendo consoles. And if Nintendo fans had said, I love it, then a lot of people would have maybe said, I hate it. But yeah, people wanted to stick it to Nintendo and Pokemon. Yep. Weird. Yeah, I'm fascinated.
Well, I kind of get, you know, because I consider myself, despite not having read too much actual theory, I consider myself an anarcho-communist. So, of course, I'm against, you know, giant corporations like Nintendo and the Pokemon Company and things like that. So I say more power to the developers and the publisher of Pal World, like steal more, you know, like we need more of that. Get rid of IP. You know, it's all bullshit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think making a case for not saying my company owns the ideas of certain artists we paid at some point and getting rid of that whole concept of companies owning the creative ideas of artists and the artists just are screwed. They are just employees essentially at that point.
Exactly.
It's definitely a case.
You would understand that better than many, I think. I mean, not just from your experience in the video game industry, but you know, your experience as an artist, even though you might not be super, you know, professional, you know, might not be, you know, making illustrations for the Pokemon Company, but
no, I'm no Rob Liefeld.
No.
But I have some experience with that. And when people do take my art now and again or extrapolate on it and take it without credit, I'm just like, thank you for showing people stuff I made. I just want people to see the stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm happy that it gets,
like,
out there.
It's the thought that someone might be looking at it and appreciating it in one way or another, you know?
Yeah,
for any reason.
And it's going to outlive me, I hope. That's part of the point of doing this podcast and things in general is someday this will affect.
Well, Jonathan, we all know nothing is going to outlive you because you're going to outlive even the heat death of the universe. after what Steph Sterling has in store for you. I've heard rumors.
Steph has a biogenetic re-engineering of my DNA plan. to make me the first immortal. And it's a very painful process that involves every cell dying slowly and then regrowing.
You're fine. You'll be fine. Sure, you're tough, work. Jonathan.
No,
you're making it sound way worse than it is. It's all above board.
You haven't seen the vat. They've been pouring Pepto-Bismol and chicken soup.
Yeah.
And I think
those were per my recommendations.
And they want to inject it and just say, this is going to be the new you. It's the new you plan. I'm concerned. But you, the you, Coco, the new Coco, the new you.
Yes.
I want to hear more about when you play a video game. When was the last time you played one and thought, this writing is good? And do you want to even get into the industry to make it good?
Do you want to be a writer of games? Yes. Tell me more about
yes and no. And I've always wanted to get involved in the video game industry in some way with my writing, whether that is like coverage, reviews, or actually writing for a game. Like, the dream would be to write for a game. So, like, despite all the reading and writing I've done throughout my life, when it comes to video games, I think the less visible or obvious writing there is, the better, for the most part, depending on what you're going for.
Interesting.
So, like I said, when I was introducing myself weeks ago or whenever it was, one of my favorite games is Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh, you didn't mention that one, no.
Yeah. A more recent one here. I'll use a more recent example. Very different tone from Shadow of the Colossus, but Jusant.
Not familiar with it.
You have heard of that. Yeah, it's an indie game. It was on Game Pass, which is why I'd heard good things from, Giant Bomb and other outlets that is pretty good. So it's all right, I'll check it out. And it was on Game Pass, so no harm, no foul there. So it's like a physics-y, like, climbing game where you play this nameless, and like, you don't know anything about the protagonist. The protagonist never says anything, like grunts and stuff are the most they ever say. You don't know. And they is, the word I have to use, because we don't know anything about their identity, their gender, anything, And it's just that person that you're playing as. And then like this little blue squishy thing that's like always on your shoulder. And it also enables you, it basically gives you like superpowers, context specific superpowers, like making vines grow out of nowhere. I don't know. That's just the first thing. So the whole point is, like, it starts out, the protagonist is walking through this desert, and then like you see all these old, rusted, worn out like boats and stuff. And then like you get to the foot of what looks like a giant mountain. And so the more you progress, the more you realize that this game is set in a world where like all the water just is like gone. Like, not even necessarily dried up or whatever. It's just, it's gone. And like the opening was the protagonist walking on the bottom of an ocean floor, essentially. And you're not really climbing a mountain. You're climbing, like, I don't know. I mean, it is a mountain, but the mountains that we have under the sea, right? Eventually you figure out the goal is to not just get all the way to the top of this place, but to like bring the water back. But anyway, the reason I like this game, or one of the reasons I like the writing, is that there really isn't any. Like, there is, of course, but there's no dialogue. There are no character interactions, aside from like visual ones between the protagonist and his little blue, or their little blue. See, even now, I still want to, like, lots of people, I want to say he for, like, I don't know why that's the default.
Oh,
like,
this patriarchal world, that's how we were raised.
It pisses me off.
Yeah, we can't help it.
I know.
That's how we were programmed. Yeah. It seems like you want stories to remember that they're video games, which I can completely get behind. Whenever people tell me I love the stories in games, I immediately get scared that we're going to have a mismatch, because I also love stories and themes in games, but when they are fully integrated into the way the game plays and what you're doing in the game, and not just stop and watch a movie. Like, the stop and watch a movie moments bum me out, because just make a movie then. But a lot of people, the first Metal Gear Solid on PS1 is older than a lot of people that play video games. They've always just thought, well, that's what video games do. They have that ingrained in them. So when they say, of course, I play video games for the story. What they mean is they play video games for the movies in the games a lot of the time. But it sounds like you're not as big of a fan of that. Can you name?
No, I don't want movie games unless it's something goofy like Until Dawn or The Quarry, where it's like you're playing through a B horror movie. That's okay.
Yeah, really, but embracing it. And Death Stranding 2, from what I've gathered, seems to be going for more comedic base. Kojima, Hideo Kojima, kind of.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up, Jonathan. I'm sorry for interrupting you for the.
No, not at all. Jump in.
Yes, because so even despite everything I just said, I'm becoming less of one as the days go on. But I am a fan of Kojima. I love the Metal Gear series. I even liked Death Stranding, but the biggest reason that I only liked Death Stranding was the writing.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because Kojima is creative and he likes to be goofy and stuff, but I think he's lost his way in so many ways. Like, I don't know if it's the team that he has now or if it's just like his ego has gotten outsized. I mean, clearly, in my unprofessional view, his ego has gotten way outsized. I mean, he's self-producing a documentary about himself. So like what the hell is up with that? Like, come on.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Death Stranding 2. Well, I mean, Death Stranding, like, I mean, you probably didn't really play any Death Stranding, right?
No, I've watched the cinemas and I watched the gameplay because I felt like I had to know in order to keep
up. Oh, so you've seen it. So you've seen all the cinematic moments and stuff?
Not all of them that I think I lost interest, but I got a sense of it. I wanted to know, what is he doing now? He's not doing so much action. He's not doing so much stealth. It seemed to be a walking simulator almost. And I just saw people falling down and dropping a baby.
All I care to know, Jonathan, is whether you're aware of the Princess Beach line.
Oh, I am.
Okay, good. That's the sort of thing, we're gonna come back to Death Stranding too, because that was one of many, many, many moments around Death Stranding that just really took me out of it. Because in Metal Gear Solid 4, which is not one of the favorite ones, but I like it. Oddly enough, it was actually the first Metal Gear game I played. There's a scene early on, you're starting out, your old Snake, you're going through war never changes or whatever the hell he says. Maybe that's Fallout, I forget.
No, but, I think you got that one. Yeah, I think that's Metal Gear.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But you meet up with the rest of the team and what's his name? I forget what his name is, but he has IBS or whatever. And he just you're in the middle of a battlefield and he out of nowhere just shits himself basically.
Johnny something. Yeah, I remember Johnny.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. And that worked for me. Like that works. It's hard for me to, I'd have to go back and play it again, I think, to really get an understanding, because I played it once and it was over a decade ago. But that scene sticks out of my mind. I just remember laughing and just at that point he hadn't completely lost it, where he was able to integrate humorous moments into his I guess in a way more serious game.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, I think so. I think that my offhand, and this is off the cuff as well, cursory analysis of where he was at as a person when he was making Metal Gear Solid 4. He felt old. He felt like, I don't want to do this anymore. So he made Snake old and not really wanting to do it anymore. And he would insert things like that. And there's also a scene of just live action eggs frying and a little girl character who's just sort of sweet and fun. He wanted to put stuff in there that would undermine Konami to some degree and be like, I know you wanted gritty, hardcore action movie.
Yes.
But I'm going to have a guy shoot his pants.
You just inspired a thought in me.
I love it. Eureka moments are the best.
Undermine Konami. I think that might be key here, Jonathan. He's running his own studio now, right? He has no one to undermine.
No.
He doesn't have a bully or a boss to be screw you, I'm going to do whatever the hell I want. And there's nothing you can do about it because I'm Kojima.
Exactly. That's right.
Now it's just I'm going to do whatever the hell I want because I'm Kojima and no one's in my way. And,
And also, I'm going to announce that Norman Reedus is my Mario and this random NPC is the Princess Peach of the new generation. Like, he just is just saying, I'm as important as
his obsession with celebrity, too. It's so heartbreaking. Like, with Metal Gear Solid 5 and just,
I know. I couldn't agree more. But then Death Stranding 2 has, like, a puppet on the shoulder of the character. And, like, the Joker is just in it suddenly, or someone who's very, like, it looks like he may have tapped into more just bizarre inspiration that hopefully doesn't have anything to try to prove. I hope he gets to the point as a writer that he, instead of...
So the puppet thing I like. The puppet I like. Like the newest Death Stranding 2 trailer, I watched 90% of it, I think.
Not bad.
And then it got Thank you. I worked hard on that. I got to the point where Mr. Troy Baker starts wielding his orange electric guitar in more ways than one electric guitar and zaps someone with it. And at that point, I turned the trailer off because I know who Troy Baker is. I know that he is a musician, and I know that he played a famous character from The Last of Us, Joel.
Oh, I forgot he did that. Yeah, yeah.
Is also a guitar player. And all I can think is Kojima is running out of ideas because he likes Troy Baker and he's just pulling from Troy Baker's life. I mean, sometimes that can be fun, but it's like Troy Baker, I like Troy Baker. He's a great actor. I mean, he's made some questionable decisions in the past regarding like AI or NFTs or something. I forget what the details were about that. But like, you know, he seems like he's trying his best. I'm not like a lot of people who are saying, you know, pick someone else. Like if he's good enough to get all this work and people like, you know, more power to him, I guess. You know, I'm sure, I guess it would be nice to have more diversity and, you know, things like that. But, you know, anyway, my point is I don't have a grudge against Troy Baker, but I do have a grudge against what I see as potentially lazy writing, you know? And it's just like that combined with, just like it just that doesn't work for me. Like the puppet thing works for me, but like that just it came out of nowhere in the wrong way. It's difficult for me to at this moment explain exactly why.
I'm going to hazard a guess for the purpose of conversation, and because I sometimes am full of myself and I think I understand everything, but I probably don't. I'm just going to try though. I have the feeling that you want to get a sincere, heartfelt, risk-taking, hopefully, message from the stories that you get. And Kojima saying, I like Troy Baker. Do you like Troy Baker? He plays guitar. I put him playing guitar in my game. Aren't we all fans of Troy Baker? That's not an interesting message. That's just him hanging out with his friends and putting them in his game, as he put Conan O'Brien in Death Stranding for no reason. And then Guillermo del Toro's just in it being like his whole... I'm going to flatter people I like by putting them in my game, which I am not one to talk. I am lucky enough to be a cameo in Lisa the Painful, and I'm a cameo in a bunch of little games. Which
and little side tangent. Sorry, Jonathan, but I just recently played the re-release of Lisa the Painful because
what'd you think?
How'd maybe they do? My favorite game. I think they did a great job, and it was actually like the first time I played it through. I think I missed that little island or whatever it is where you and Steph and Conrad are hanging out. And but the second time around, I was like, no, I'm 100%ing this game. And I'm because I heard on either Boston's Favorite Son or something else years ago that you all were in. I was like, what? How did I miss this? So yeah, no, I went and found it and like and kicked. Whose ass is it? I think it's Steph's ass or is it Conrad's ass? Like you fight one of you
fight us both. Conrad is just lying there his formal mustache. Steph is a boss, and then I am both like an amorphous blob and a rabid fellow with an afro. It's a treat to be a part of. The Zoom call is gonna self-destruct and I have to That's okay.
One last thing, Jonathan. Last thing. Please send my best wishes and love to Steph, if you would. She's been an inspiration to me. She's they're one of the people who helped me realize that I'm trans and I'm a woman, you know. So, you know, I just want them to know that, you know.
Absolutely. I will let them know. We record Boston's Favorite Son pretty regularly, I think. And they always love hearing that, as big as Steph's personality is and how confident they appear. And they are truly confident in their moments, but they also have moments of wondering, like, what's the point? Am I good at this? How come PewDiePie is a multimillionaire and just drawing anime and getting, I don't know if you've seen what PewDiePie's up to lately. He just announced, no. I'm going to learn how to draw. And the videos are getting millions of views, and he's just like drawing pretty good anime. But because it's PewDiePie, he can turn it into a business, I guess. Steph wonders, am I having a purposeful effect on people? And every time I tell them.
Way more so than PewDiePie. PewDiePie can go fuck himself. No, Steph has way more of a significant effect, in like a real effect in people's lives, as opposed to some broadly appealing schmuck like PewDiePie.
Couldn't agree more.
That's apples and oranges.
Yeah.
They're way better.
I agree 100%. I just wish those oranges got those fat sacks of cash like the apples do. We got to change things around so the oranges are on top one of these days. Coco, so fun to talk to you. And I didn't want to skirt over the massive life stuff you're in the middle of. I wasn't sure how much you wanted to share on the show, so I didn't get into it. But before we wrap, I want to make sure you know I'm hoping for you and wishing the best for you. It sounds really, really stressful. And if there's some way I can help you, I'm out of work currently, but if you need a couple of bucks, I'll throw you some bones to try to get through this bizarre life we're living.
Because
you deserve all the help I can offer.
No, I don't accept Jonathan bucks. Thank you, but you know they're no good where I'm from. You know, I appreciate the value, but no one around here does, so I can't use them. But I appreciate the thought. But no, you can help me out by, like, I don't know. Do you have any like random knickknacks like around? Like if you don't mind like showing me a picture, or like I can pay for postage if you want to send me like just any random old knickknack. It doesn't have to be important or significant to you in any way. Just like anything.
I will send you a knickknack. Absolutely.
Consider
it knicked. Consider it done.
Knicked. All right. Deal.
Maybe I'll send you Knack, the PS4 game. Signed by me.
That's
Knack.
Yes. I don't want your actual name. If you do that, Jonathan, no real names. You can sign it to Coco. But yes, I want you to sign it as Knack, so that I'm the only one, or you know, people who listen to this are the only ones who know that you're the actual person, or supposedly. I don't have proof, but you know, you're the one who signed it. So yeah, that's what I want. I'm gonna put it in a display case and put it on my wall in my apartment, and it'll be a really good conversation piece that everyone will care about and be interested in.
I feel like that idea is more important than me as a person. I think that's going to live on. my autograph.
No, we've already gone over this. You're going to outlive everything. You're going to live on,
John. After the new you injections. That's true. Coco,
yes,
you're welcome back on this show anytime. You are a delight. And thank you so much for being on.
Oh my God. Thank you so much for telling me that, Jonathan. I've been having such a hard time, and it's such a pleasure speaking with you. And it's a dream come true. I can't believe it. This is great. You're the best. Thank you so much. And tell Tanya I said hi too. Tell Tanya I said hi.
I will. Thank you, Coco.
So wonderful to talk to Coco. I just sent Coco a t-shirt with a little cartoon of me by a artist named McNyers back when I can't remember why this happened, but it's a cartoon of me holding an umbrella like Mary Poppins saying, I believe in you, buddy, while flying away. I can be sort of a Mary Poppins type character in people's lives. And gosh darn it, I'm proud of it. You know who's less of a Mary Poppins these days? Phil Spencer. I believe his name is, at the Xbox Corp. Jeez, Xbox doing big old layoffs, if I remember correctly, even after they bought Bethesda and tried to tune them up and make them an Xbox exclusive platform, maybe. then they laid off a bunch of people there. It's very, very sad. And now they're about to announce something really big. I was waiting to record this. Poor Daniel doesn't have much time to edit it because I was waiting to record this just in case Xbox announced the news.
Oh, I thought you were waiting to record it until after the Super Bowl.
No, I didn't. I didn't pay much attention to that stuff. But Xbox is going to announce something via podcast.
Oh, God.
On February 15th. I think to make it so...
Is that Valentine's Day or the day after?
The day after. Oh, so everyone's going to get their loves and hugs out. And then they're going to tune in to the very romantic Xbox podcast with Phil Spencer, who people are anticipating is going to announce that Xbox is no longer going to make games exclusive to their own consoles. Does this mean anything to you, Tanya? Is this just word salad, gobbledygook?
Word salad. So they're saying
yes.
Their games are no longer going to be exclusive to Xbox consoles.
That's everyone's best guess because Xbox consoles not selling so good. The Xbox 360 sold pretty well. It did as well, almost as well, as the PS3. The PS3 did almost as well as the Wii. They all hit around 100 million units sold. I believe Xbox 360 did a little bit less. This was like 15 years ago, though.
Mm-hmm.
Then they came out with the Xbox One, affectionately referred to as the X-Bone by me and some other people probably, did terrible. And now they've got the Xbox Series X and Xbox Series S, which have been out for, I think, about 3.5 years.
Why do they put so many X's in there?
There's so much sex with X's.
It's too much sex with X's.
I know. Too much sex, too much X's. And the consoles are selling, I think they've sold around 20 million units in 3 years. So as bad as the Xbox One. A little better than the Nintendo GameCube, which people thought was a tremendous flop. So their consoles
are... People love that GameCube now, though.
And people love the Xbox 360 now because it's retro and they're nostalgic for it. I did a poll of people like, why would you buy an Xbox Series S or Series X? Like, what's the point? And almost everyone who said they bought one said it was so they could play Xbox 360 games because it's the only console that will let you go into the back catalog of Xbox games in that way. But in terms of current exclusives for Xbox, like Xbox brand is making a ton of money because they make Minecraft. I mix it up because Microsoft almost sounds like Minecraft.
Yeah.
Microsoft publishes Minecraft now, and that makes tons of money on computers, on the PS5, the PS4, the Switch, and I guess a little bit on Xbox. So they're selling games multi-platform, making more money than anybody else. More money than even Nintendo, as far as I know. But they're doing it on a multi-platform way, not on their own systems. So what's the point of having your own system when, long story short, they're basically just okay PCs. They're okay gaming computers.
Let me ask you a question I haven't asked you before.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What's your favorite console besides a Nintendo console, if you had to omit Nintendo?
Oh, sure. The PS1.
The PS1.
Love the PS1. It was truly the culmination of we do what Nintendo don't philosophy, which it can be a lot of fun. Nintendo, a lot of their games, fun, weird, interesting. Earthbound, Splatoon, classic Animal Crossing, less so the more recent ones, which are a little bit watered down in terms of their weirdness. But I like it when games get weird, first and foremost, and Nintendo can do that. Even better when somebody tries to out-weird Nintendo. And that's what Sony did with the PS1. They were like, you think Mario's weird? Wait till you play Jumping Flash. You think Zelda is quirky? Try Parappa the Friggin' Rapper. He's a rapping dog. So that's my stance in a nutshell. The Xbox consoles were always a turnoff for me because instead of trying to be more surreal and fun and silly, they immediately were like, we are serious sports brain. Like, you're gonna get your gamer score, you're gonna be better than all your friends and competitive online, but I was like, ugh, yuck. And it's neon green, it's like a Mountain Dew junk food sports mix vibe they got going. The most recent Xbox consoles actually have less of that, and I'm tempted to buy a Xbox Series S, the little one, because it costs like $250 now. So it's just a cute little video game console that I could play old games on. So ironically, now I want to get back on the Xbox track when they're about to die out, in part because I also want to play those old Xbox 360
games. I thought you were
going to
say, in part because I also want to die out.
I do. I'm excited to just retire and wither in that order. Wither, then retire would be
hopefully not the other order, yeah.
No. That'd be too much.
You don't want that. That would be bad.
Speaking of not withering, stronger than ever is Kim Spirit, professional wrestler. She's going to talk to us about how she's been going back in her old catalog of Xbox 360 era games and having a good old time.
Back again, it's the one and only Kim. Wrestling with themes, getting deep with dreams, helping us figure out what it all really means. Kim Spirit.
I'm back with Kim Spirit. So excited to talk with you, Kim. Wrestler extraordinaire, liver of life out there.
Extraordinaire.
Well, not everyone is so extraordinaire, Kim. You take your extraordinariness for granted because you're so used to you. You live as yourself every day. Other people not living the kind of life you have, not having the kind of highs and lows, the excitement. How have you been since last we spoke?
I've been really good. Got a new job. My boyfriend evolved into a fiancé.
Whoa, that's so exciting. So the relationships are getting cemented. The work is getting, I hope, better than it was before, or at least different in an interesting way?
Yeah, it smells much better than the piss lab did.
That's right. You were around human urine all the time.
I sure was. Oh my God, it was awful.
Did it waft?
At least daily, I would gag because some people, like, they either wouldn't follow directions or, like, they would just not close the lid tightly enough on their sample. Mm-hmm. So, like, usually we could tell which ones were going to be bad because we'd get them in the mail. We'd open the little FedEx thing and, like, the box inside would be damp.
Damp. Not with just water or mildew. It was human urine. The waste that you excrete through the urethra was there for you.
Yes, that. It smelled so bad.
Yeah. It's underrated or at least underreported how much a urine smell can really ruin your day.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a piss lab, so some of them are just going to be full of blood.
I didn't know that. To you, it was, again, second nature. Like, it's a piss lab. So, of course, some of them are going to be filled, not just like a speck, but like jam-packed with blood. Can you picture, and sorry if you've done this already, I haven't done it myself. I have peed blood before, so I know that feeling, and it's not great. But filling that pee blood in a vial and being like, I guess I'll put this in the mail. Like, I would be running to the doctor with that pee blood if it were me, not waiting for the U.S. Postal Service or whatever carrier of the mail you're trusting that day to make sure that you get the results in time. I would be surprised if I opened a box and found pee blood. That's me.
Yeah. Usually they'd see the doctor first and the doctor would be like, you need to send your pee blood to this lab now.
Whoa. To me, not an expert, I want the doctor to work a little faster than the mail would with the pee problem fixing. But hey, things can only go so fast and you're done with that whole thing now anyway. Yep. When it comes to video games, what have been the themes and the overarching connections you've been making with where your interests have gone as you have gone forward in life and becoming a even more fun and interesting person?
Oh, well, thank you. I started playing a lot of older games, especially over the holidays, because, like, for my birthday, for Christmas, and for... Not for New Year's.
No.
I had COVID, so I was in quarantine.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it sucked. So I was just, like, sequestered in the bedroom playing, like, Baldur's Gate 3. But I also started playing, like, Fallout New Vegas.
Oh.
I got a lot of retro games for Christmas, like Zelda Minish Cap.
Oh, fun. The Game Boy Advance one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I got the Link's Awakening remake.
For the Game Boy Advance as well?
Yeah. I don't think I ever played the original Link's Awakening, but this is the way I would prefer to play it anyway.
Yeah, that's got the four swords. Not that you can play that unless you have the link cables and all that stuff. But it had a little bit more to it. That's right. Huh, yeah, interesting.
I got four swords too.
Oh, fun. Did you get to play that?
I haven't played it yet. Like, I played it when I was younger, but I haven't played it since I got it recently. But like, yeah, just seeing all these games that I didn't get a chance to play when they were like, you know, in their time. And it was just seeing how they held up was interesting.
Sure. And did you find that the feeling of knowing that that game you're playing is a full, complete experience that is never going to get any DLC, it's never going to get any patches, there's never going to be any microtransactions or any sort of ways to turn it into a live experience, made it feel more like entering a time capsule? Or did that aspect of it change the way you felt about playing those games at all?
I'm not really sure. Like, I think I went in thinking like, all right, time to see what the fuss was all about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the first one I really got into was Fallout New Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was popular for its time. It's been popular and still is popular for people who like Fallout.
Yeah.
And I had recently seen the H Bomber Guy video essay on how Fallout New Vegas is genius.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, you know what? Of all the people who have told me that Fallout New Vegas is genius, it took this one British guy to convince me. So I actually bought it, started playing it. And yeah, I was really into it for a while, especially like while I was sick.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a little ray of sunshine in that shitty time.
Well, tell me about that, because it's not a sunny game, if I recall. I haven't played a ton of it myself. It's computer games, and I rarely boot up the computer. I use it to talk to people such as yourself, and it's such a privilege. Playing video games on the computer, I always get distracted and feel like I need to go do work, whereas when I'm playing on a console, and I know New Vegas is on consoles as well, but it just never crossed my path in that way. So I've only heard people play it. I've watched them play it. I've heard people talk about it. I know that post-apocalypse, there's monsters, there's trouble. Is piss involved? Do you have to turn your own piss into water? Am I remembering that? Or is that a dream I had?
I don't think I got to that part of the game, if that is a thing.
It's probably just pure me just coming out. Realizing that when you talk about pure me coming out and you're talking about pee at the same time, you gotta be careful. But anyway, tell us what happens in this game and what made it resonate for you while you were in the middle of what I feel like is a post-apocalyptic experience when you have to be trapped in your house because of the modern plague, COVID. Likewise, Fallout New Vegas, you're coming out after the nuclear war has happened and ravaged the world. What is it about how those two experiences work together, having COVID and playing this apocalypse game, that worked for you, you think?
I don't think I ever drew the connection. I was just like going into this game thinking, all right, it's probably gonna, some things might not have aged so good,
mm-hmm.
but I'm gonna give it a chance. I'm gonna try to remember what frame of mind I was in the year that it came out.
And when was that? Was that 2010?
I feel like it was sometime after that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like it was parallel to Skyrim in some way.
October 19th, 2010.
Oh, I remembered correctly. And it didn't do as well as Skyrim. Nothing really did. But it was similarly beloved in terms of how it gave you that Bethesda open world feeling. So you're picturing yourself in 2010. You're cracking open New Vegas. It's almost like a nostalgia trip, it sounds like, but nostalgic for games you never played in the first place. And did it transport you back to those more innocent times?
I wouldn't say they were more innocent times, but I was able to suspend my standards. No, because there's plenty of games that like look old, have that retro feel.
Mm-hmm.
And standards can be so subjective.
Oh, sure. But you have to adjust.
I was much more forgiving of its little quirks and glitches.
Sure. Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. When you go in, and I see this happen to people all the time, a game that they loved 10 years ago now looks like garbage to them because their way of filtering, was this cared about, changes as the capacity for the technology changes. So that's what we're really looking for. We've got a constant filter of, is this game I'm playing, was it made with passion and dedication and hard work, or was it just made, you know, for a cash grab? By those standards, how you feel about what you're working with, what game you're playing, can change pretty quickly. So you adjusted those standards, you dialed them back, and it did it feel futuristic and fun, or did it just seem like a hearty, folksy trip down memory lane?
My only compass for Fallout games really was like Fallout 3 and a little bit of Fallout 4.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that Fallout New Vegas wasn't even Bethesda. I think it was Obsidian.
Oh, my mistake.
So the narrative was a lot different. The structure of the story and some of the mechanics in the game, they were different than Bethesda. Still had some of the glitches, still had some goofy stuff going on, but like not quite Bethesda.
Mm-hmm.
And some people think that like Bethesda is even kind of like still feeling sour about, you know, Obsidian making their IP better than they could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which similarly, I think with Minish Cap, if I remember correctly, that might have been Capcom.
Oh my gosh, was it?
I think I'm either dreaming that or I'm correct, which is almost always true about everything I say. I can try to do a quick Google on that. But I think, I know for certain Capcom worked with Nintendo for a little while and made I was right?
Yeah.
And I always thought that they were sticking their name in there on purpose, Minish Cap. And I was always expected there to be a character named like Colin.
Oh, I never thought of that.
Yeah, they're being cute. So it was Capcom who at the time were some of the best 2D sprite artists going, who picked up Zelda because Nintendo didn't want to do 2D sprite art based Zelda games anymore. They had moved fully into the 3D sphere, but they knew there was an audience for top down, and that's the best that the Game Boy Advance could do. So they wanted to make sure Zelda was represented on the Game Boy Advance, and Minish Cap was like their attempt at that. I still think Minish Cap looks better than at least half of the Zelda games that have come since, but I am biased towards the sprite art. What was your experience with Minish Cap like?
I didn't get to play it yet. It's literally in my Game Boy Advance SP right now.
That's so exciting. Jeez.
Like, it looks beautiful. And I'm excited to see, like, how it's different from, like, you know, Link's Awakening, the Zelda games that I have played. Like, it's one of my, what do they call it? Like, my fiance is really big into, like, collecting old, like, Sega Saturn games.
Mm-hmm.
And collectors have what's called like a holy grail item,
yeah,
where it's
right.
Like the thing that they are searching for,
sure.
Like the thing that will make their collection complete.
Yeah, yeah.
Minish Cap was one of them for me.
Oh, fun. Yeah, I'm really hopeful about it for you. I will warn you, this is not interesting listening, but I can't help it. Anytime somebody hasn't played Minish Cap, I have to tell them that if you want to get all the Kina Stones, there's an old man who's going to die. And you've got to save that man right. There's a ghost involved. There's a jar. You got to Google it, I guess. Because if you don't save the old man, you never can collect every stone if you want 100% all the collectibles in that. And it's packed with goofy collectibles. It's not a big game, but they tried to extend how much fun you could have with it by having a whole list of Easter eggs to collect and little quests to do in order to get them. So I missed out on it the first time, and I still look at my save file, and I think I have like 99% of the stones, and it pains me. It pains me. So yeah, look out for that old man. He's dying. So yeah, interesting for that to be your holy grail. Did you like Zelda a lot growing up? Was it a series that you adhered to?
It was hard to say. It's a series that was, can't think of the words, something to like my development of my tastes for video games.
Okay.
Like Ocarina of Time was like my first encounter with Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
And then I played Four Swords on the Game Boy Advance. And then when I got older I wanted to play Majora's Mask, but I didn't have an N64, so I couldn't. What was the next Zelda game I played? It couldn't have been Breath of the Wild. There had to be something in there.
There's a few in between. There's Wind Waker. Yeah. There's Twilight Princess. There's Skyward Sword. But a lot of people bounced off those. A lot of people took a long break from Zelda in between.
I think I did that, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of folks did. You're not alone. And then came back with Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
Which is a big one.
People like that
yes.
one.
I don't think they get any more different than Minish Cap and Breath of the Wild. Minish Cap starts with like a lot of talking and it actually sucks a little bit. I love Minish Cap, but I don't want to sit through text of like, you're in the fair now, Link, walk around.
It'll
be a while before you get a sword, so I hope you like tutorials. Like, it's got that kind of 15 years ago Zelda problem where they don't let you just start goofing around for a bit.
Yeah.
But once you are in there, there's a ton of fun to be had. And as you probably already know, but for the listeners who may not know, Zelda for a while was either going to split things in between different time periods, so you could go to Young Link or Old Link or the Dark World and Link to the Past, or with Majora's Mask taking on different shapes and stuff, taking on different monster embodiments. With Minish Cap, you can shrink.
And it is super duper fun to,
yeah, like diminish, like you get small. It's super fun to go into a room and be like, what are the little sprites? What are the little pixels that might be like a mouse hole that if I find a place I can shrink down, I can go in that hole and discover like a whole world within a world. So it's really fun to have the two maps layered, the regular size world and then the world of the Minish happening at the same time and seeing how they like interact.
That sounds so cute. Yeah, I think I'm going to start playing that like right after we get done here.
Oh, good. I'm glad I warned you. That
it's yeah, I'm not, so glad too.
It's boring at the start, but if you can get through like the first 10 minutes, it turns into like an actual game where you just kind of goof around pretty quickly after that. It seems like you're doing things right. I personally, I didn't want to put my values onto you.
Oh, it's okay.
That's kind. I'm doing it now, sort of anyway. So it's too late. But there's been a lot of talk this week about what defines a live service, because there was a survey done saying like 90% of games being developed right now are a live service. And that made a lot of people say, oh, that's awful. Games used to just be something you could buy and enjoy, but instead now they're live service. People pushed back and said, oh, that just means it'll have DLC or it'll have updates and stuff. And I still was sitting there thinking, I still don't want that. And when I buy a game, I want to know that I'm done with that game. I don't always want new stuff. And if I do want new stuff, I want it to be a whole other purchase, not something that sucks me in with saying, oh, just spend some more time with this old game. We made some DLC. Maybe it's good. Maybe it's not. It's free, though. We're going to capture your attention again and make you focus on us only. I feel almost like it's an unhealthy relationship with games sometimes that happen like that. When you've got a friend and you're like, let's hang out. And they're like, or I'll just text you about hanging out. Or I'll just make you think we'll get a full hangout again. But it never really happens, and the texts aren't bad, but it's not like the full friendship experience. And when I buy a new game and I take it home, I feel like I'm getting the full friendship experience with a little smidgen of DLC and whatnot. It sometimes feels like a tease, I guess.
I feel like with games as a live service, I immediately think of like games where you have to have an internet connection in order to play it.
Yeah, which is even worse.
Yes, I disagree with that completely. If there is a single player experience to be had, there is no reason to be required to have an internet connection to play that game after you have purchased it.
Yeah.
That's just ridiculous.
And you know the only reason they do that is to weirdly keep you on some kind of hook instead of just letting you run free with the thing that you bought, which is so disturbing, especially in the face of Ubisoft recently saying, we don't want people to get used to the idea that once they pay for a game, they own it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like renting it forever. There's a lot of scary things that could happen, which makes me all the more nostalgic for the days when games were just things you bought and played until you were done without any sort of hooks involved.
Yeah, and like the big thing is that like games as a live service, like if you do absolutely have to have an internet connection to play it, when, like, you know, it's just a single player experience, like, you can play multiplayer if you want to, but, you know, one day they're going to shut down the servers.
Yeah.
You don't know when, but, like, when they do, if you need an internet connection and there's no server to connect to, then you've lost your single player experience too, as far as I know. I'm not sure how it all works, but, like, that's where my logic is.
Yeah, you're absolutely
right. If I understand anything correctly.
I think you do. They often won't even let you boot up the game until it connects to the internet first. And there's DRM and all this stuff. They just added it, I think, to the Suicide Squad game, which people are saying they're nostalgic for the older Suicide Squad games or the older Batman games by Rocksteady, where Batman just punches the criminals and is like a perfect crime-fighting dude. I don't feel nostalgic for older Batman games, but I do feel nostalgic for the pre-DRM, always online days of games. And I hope that Suicide Squad can make a version of that, because we don't have time to talk about the new Suicide Squad game, but it's got some pretty good writing. But the actual playing of it and the monetization of it is where the problem comes in, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I feel like in a minute I am going to start talking about that.
That's great. But the Zoom call is going to die.
I know.
I know. Just, do you want to talk about it briefly before the Zoom dies?
The live service thing. Mm-hmm. Also, like, just the preservation of games, especially in a world where, like, Warner Brothers is just deleting entire shows and movies and stuff like that. Like, people are just, like, annihilating entire experiences, things that, like, artists and actors and all these people have worked on to create, and they're just gone from the world unless someone was able to capture it somehow, and, like, you can get it through piracy.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. It's so weird that streaming, which we thought was going to make all media found, is in fact creating more lost media than ever before. You can't buy it on DVD. You just have to hope, as you're saying, it's on a torrent somewhere and that you can trust it. And it's going to start a whole new black market, I think, in the long run, which better than no market at all, I suppose. But Kim Spirit, I love talking to you. Nobody in the world, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, I'm scanning everybody I know in the world, all of them. Yep, I've seen all thousands of their faces just now. I work that quickly.
Wow.
Nobody.
That's fast, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I do my best. Nobody can hear me be on the wrong track for a conversation like you do and then spin it into positive fun anyway. I was like, so did this make you feel nostalgic? And you were like, no. And I was like, oh, so what? It was like having COVID playing Fallout? And you're like, not at all. But anyway, and yeah, you kept it going. You kept it rolling. You kept it so fun as you always do. And I'm so grateful to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you. I don't think I could have nostalgia. Like, if anything, if I do go back and play a game I'm nostalgic for, I realize that, like, even though it was awesome back then, I hate it now.
Right. And this was the opposite of that, it sounds like. It was, instead of going back and being disappointed that it's not as good as you remembered, it is in fact better because it's not like the kind of games that they necessarily make today.
Yeah, and that's not fair to the games I'm nostalgic for. Why am I being nicer about older games that I never played than I am about games that I loved?
Oh, the games will be okay. They love you, which is all that counts, and you deserve it.
Oh, thank you. Kim Spirit.
Thanks for playing the game and telling us what you thought. You know we like that a lot.
Always fantastic to talk with Kim and all of our guests. What a delight, what a treat as always to have the opportunity to talk to so many wonderful people. And we've been getting sweet DMs that I'm always too embarrassed to respond to. People saying, you helped me to feel good about understanding myself as my gender and whatnot. This show, helping people with
gender.
That's great. It's not even the title of the show. it's not even an explicit mission of the show to ever get into that stuff. And yet, we've been helpful to some. And I couldn't be more happy about that. Time to plug, time to get some help from the listeners. Please, give my projects some help. They're struggling. Everyone's struggling every day. Are you struggling, Tanya?
Oh, it feels like I'm wearing clown shoes every day.
Yeah, no, just honk, honk with every step. Nintendo Force, I just wrote a wildly passionate, in the style of, I don't know, like, not gossip reporters, but you know more about this than I, Tanya. There's people who just write about, like, what Taylor Swift wore that
day.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, she slayed in a...
Maybe that's the job I need.
You'd be great at that job. I wrote in that style. I said that Princess Peach slayed.
In her outfit?
In her outfit. Recently, for an upcoming issue, a Princess Peach-themed issue of Nintendo Force, I think I finally wrapped on all my work for this issue, so I can run it down real quick. Did a preview of Simon Quest Transylvania Adventure. Interviewed one of the art directors for Okami, who was also the full-on game director of El Shaddai, Ascension of the Metatron. A game that takes forgotten texts from the Old Testament and turns them into a 3D action game?
Well, that's something else.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love a little 3D action from the Old Testament?
It's bananas, and it's also a little sexy in that...
I'm not surprised. I bet it is quite...
Yes?
Well, I was going to say scary, and then I was like, I don't know that that's the right word.
Hmm.
The Old Testament is terrifying.
Yeah, there's
and
some...
action-packed.
There's some real stakes in El Shaddai Ascension of the Metatron, which is being re-released on consoles. It's already on Steam, but it's now HD coming to Switch, so I got to interview the director of it for Nintendo Force, and he loves drawing shirtless dudes in jeans. Like, he made the star of the game, Enoch. He's wearing, like, cool battle armor, but the more hits he takes... He just ends up being like a hot Abercrombie
little,
guy.
A little
by
moody
the end.
At the yeah.
He keeps those jeans on, but those jeans are tight. And he hangs out with Lucifer. You know what Lucifer's wearing?
Nothing.
Tight jeans.
Oh.
Tight jeans and a button up that's unbuttoned, so you see a little clavicle. See those the clav shots.
That's like what my dad was wearing the other day.
That's
I was like,
not what I expected to hear. Yeah. So Daddy Lucifer showing his clav. In El Shaddai, definitely worth checking out, and I hope you read the interview with Sawaki Takeyasu. Ooh, there's cats rumbling and grumbling. What else did I do in there? Oh, I wrote about Pal World. I wrote about Princess Peach, I think I already mentioned. And I wrote about Wa-Peach, the under-discussed Wario version of Peach that never actually made it to a game, but the concept art for Wa-Peach is out there, and we wrote about it. What else did I do? Oh, I interviewed the creator of Lone Survivor for Lock On issue number 6, which is ending its funding campaign this week. It's got a cover by the famous artist of the Final Fantasy series who did the actual character designs for Final Fantasy 1 through 6, Amano-san. Amazing original artwork of Terra, the main character of Final Fantasy 6, on this book. It's unbelievable. You have artwork done by this guy on your refrigerator. He did like a Sandman painting.
Oh,
and you
yeah.
just got it there. Like, oh yeah, I love this artist. I did a thing where that artist did the cover. It's unbelievable.
It is pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, Lock On issue 6, check it out. And I think that's all my plugs.
So proud of you. So
thanks.
Proud of you on your extra side hustles.
So
the
lucky.
Things you do,
so
the
lucky.
Things you do in a day.
I do it every day. I do a little bit of this and a little bit of that every day. On top of like the stuff that actually pays the bills. This is the stuff I do for the love of it. And I hope you support it and get in on the love. And I hope you keep listening to the show and also back the Patreon so Daniel can pay his bills.
Yeah, if you want to give Daniel the love this Valentine's Day, shoot him $1 a month.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to work on a new comic. The last comic I did for the patrons was about you, Tanya. Having a baby. And that was a little while ago now. Ugh, I got to get back on track. But I can do it. I'm going to do it all. Do a new comic for the patrons. I'm going to do the Nintendo Force. I'm going to keep writing for Lock On. I'm going to keep writing for Destructoid.com. I'm going to keep doing this podcast. Just going to keep doing it.
Don't short out, Jonathan. Don't short out. Jonathan. I'm going to unplug you.
I need it. I need an unplug. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. We love you so much, and we hope you come back for next time.
See you soon.
Talking to Women About Video Games is hosted by Jonathan and Tanya, with editing and production by Daniel. Music by Jonathan and Daniel. You can support the show and get exclusive bonuses on Patreon at patreon.com/ttwav. And you can follow us on Blue Sky at ttwav.bsky.social. Thanks for listening. Hey folks, we want to thank our patrons who have continued to support the show. Thank you all so much, and even if you aren't a supporter, thanks for listening. Here's a special shout out to our patrons who have supported at the $5 or more level this week. Gumba Master, Benjamin S, Benjamin V, Bo M, Donald M, Evan, Kiat, Samuel P, Counterfeith, Ewan B, Ricardo V, and Soda Baby. If you want to hear your name here in the credits, check out the Patreon page and donate at the Supporter Extreme or Supporter to the Max levels. And as always, you'll get access to the exclusive content we produce, such as Jonathan's comic book and the free downloads of all the music that I write for the show every year. Anyway, have a nice week and be sure to talk to some women about video games.
I have peed blood before.
Oh,
it's probably just pure pee blood coming now. I have peed blood before. Look out for that old man. He's dying. I have peed blood before. Feels like a tease.
That's so exciting.
I have peed blood before. I would be running to the doctor with that pee blood. Look out for that old man.
Hamburger slips.
I have peed blood before.
Hamburger slips.
It's probably just pure pee blood coming down.
Hamburger slips.
That's so exciting. Look out for that old man.
Hamburger slips.
I have peed blood before.
Hamburger slips.
He's dying. He's dying.
Hamburger slips.
That's so exciting. It's probably just pure me. It's probably just pure pee blood. It's probably just pure me.
That's so exciting. That's so exciting.
It's probably just pure me.
Feels like a tease.
It's probably just pure pee blood coming down. It's probably just pure me.
Feels like a tease.
That's so exciting. That's so exciting.
He's dying.
Hamburger slips.
I have peed blood before.
He's dying. He's dying.
Hamburger slips.
I would be running to the doctor with that pee blood.
He's dying.
Hamburger slips.
I have peed blood before.
He's dying. He's dying.
Hamburger slips.
That's so exciting.
He's dying.